You fought in the Clone Wars?
Yes. I was once a Jedi Knight, the same as your father. For over 1,000 generations, the Jedi Knights were the guardians of peace and justice in the Old Republic. Before the Dark Times.
Protocol 66 must not be discovered by the Jedi.
Yes, Lord Tyrannus.
You must face the gravest of journeys. Tomorrow, the ancient homeworld of the Sith.
You're listening to Coffee with Kenobi.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
Ah, very good.
Welcome to A Cup of the Clone Wars. Here are your hosts, Dan Sisa and Corey Clapp.
This is Gar Van Orden, longtime listener and winner of the co-host and episode of A Cup of Clone Wars. And you are listening to Coffee with Kenobi with Dan Z and Corey Club. This is the podcast you're looking for.
Welcome to A Cup of Clone Wars, where Coffee with Kenobi examines Star Wars The Clone Wars through a critical lens. On today's show, we will be discussing the three episodes of the Clovis arc of Season 6. Joining us for A Cup of Clone Wars is Gar Van Orden, longtime listener, friend of the show, and the winner of our co-host A Cup of Clone Wars with Coffee with Kenobi. We are excited to have a cup of coffee with Gar and to discuss this intriguing arc. Welcome, Gar.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for being on the show. It's a real thrill for us to have you on. We've interacted with you through Facebook and Twitter and love hearing your thoughts on different stuff with Star Wars and the saga. So we're just so happy that we could get this to work out. And of course, I'm going to be very biased since you're a fellow educator too. It'll be really fun to hear what you have to say. And then of course, I'm going to try to recruit you for Star Wars in the classroom too.
it's my pleasure. I mean, yeah, we've been talking a little bit here and I'm nervous because you guys are great. And, obviously been listening to your show for a while and I was telling you that podcasting is kind of a dream of anybody that listened to a lot of podcasts for a while, and this is just fantastic.
Well, it's fun. Well, so far you're nailing the audition, my friend. So just keep up the good work.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hopefully.
great. Well, right off the bat, Corey, we've got the Clovis arc, which. It's a pretty famous arc. It was announced during Celebration 5 in Orlando that this was going to happen. It never showed up in Season 5 of the Clone Wars, so we knew that the bonus content was going to have the Clovis arc there. And then we get this thing. And you and I, it's been our practice so far with A Cup of Clone Wars, we haven't discussed our thoughts in advance, and I'm not sure what Gar thinks either. So, Corey, why don't you start? What are your overall opinions of this arc?
Okay, to me, it was a little bit slow moving to begin with. There's a lot more political themes running through it, which doesn't interest me a whole lot. You know, crisper and cleaner all along. But as the story progressed through the three episodes, you know, it really gained some steam and really asked some crucial questions and brought up a lot of different ideas that I hadn't thought of that I was really glad they brought up as far as tying into the whole saga itself. Really, it really hits a lot of big notes, more than I thought it would be. So all in all, I think it was a good arc. I enjoyed it through to the end. I'm excited to see what you guys think too.
Cool. Well, Gar, what about you? How did the Clovis arc impact you?
Well, I really like this episode arc. I mean, it's part of my favorite TV series ever, of course, being that it's the only Star Wars series, and it's actually quality. It's not like, you know, the holiday special or something.
right.
But, I mean, I got to be honest that at first, at least, it was my least favorite of the four arcs of the season. And so when you had told me that this is the one we're doing, I'm like, oh man, this is
bittersweet.
Yeah. I was like, dang it, this is the one we're doing. Well, I better do a really good job though, so that they can invite me back, because I had seen it twice before. You know, when I first watched it, it was like, what day of the week did they release the Clone Wars? It was like on a Friday.
I think it was Friday, yeah.
Yeah, yes. But for some reason, I don't remember what I was doing, but I was busy all day on Saturday. So I didn't want to watch it at midnight. And so I went, I went ahead and did this thing that I was doing. And then when I got back later that night, I turned it on and watched the first arc with the clones, and it was like, oh, this is so awesome. This is the best thing ever. And I was like, oh, I can't stop. This is great. You know? And then I went on to this one and I was like, oh, banking and, you know, Queen Amidala, you know, this, you know, started to, it is getting late at night. I was like, oh man, it started to get late. But then, you know what? I've watched it again since then. And then since you told me this, I watched it twice, the three episodes twice yesterday.
Cool.
And I was like, and I was taking notes and I was reading other people's thoughts and everything. And you know what? I've really grown to appreciate this more and more. And I'll tell you, I guess I don't want to give it all away right now, but
sure.
Yeah, I'll tell you more, but I mean, I've been able to appreciate this more and more. So thank you for this opportunity.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for being on it. And thank you for doing your homework, which of course, you know, that's what we do here, right?
Yeah.
But you know, I had similar, experiences when I watched it the second time through, as far as seeing different things, but I've always enjoyed this arc. And as far as how do I rank them? To me, it's like for the season 6 of the Clone Wars, you have the Yoda arc and you have the Order 66 arc and then everything else. And I kind of lump everything else in kind of the same pile. I enjoy it very, very, very much. In fact, there are a lot of things I like about this, particularly the second episode, you know, of this entire thing, The Rise of Clovis.
Yeah.
But to me, the first episode is so different in tone from the second and third, and it raises a lot of interesting questions. I think philosophically, when you look at the relationship of Anakin to the two closest people in the entire saga, Obi-Wan and Padme, this one is rich with a lot of examination, and I'm looking forward to seeing what you both think about that. So what? Let's talk about Clovis, Rush Clovis. Originally, he was in season 1 in the Sin and Spy episode, and I almost forgot who he was, to be honest, because it's been so long since we've seen him. But what can we make of Clovis as a character? And Gar, why don't we just start with you?
Well, Clovis is interesting because, yeah, last time we saw him, he was in the Senate, yet we had suspected that he was with the Separatists, and we find out he was, of course. And then all of a sudden here, he's not with the Senate or the Separatists. He's with, you know, with the Moons. And it turns out that he grew up with the Moons and was like adopted when he was 12. And that was all kind of interesting to me. And so I don't know, why did they bring him back? Like, I mean, because it could have been anybody else, I suppose. It could have, because we didn't know before that he was adopted by the Moons and stuff like that. And so they could have brought in some other random person, but why did they bring him specifically back? I mean, I think it's just so that there can be
for Anakin, yeah,
yeah, the love triangle, of course, and that's the drama and that's the excitement.
You bet it is. And go ahead, were you going to say something else?
No, I mean, I don't know. I don't know how much I should pace myself as far as
go for it, man. Go for it.
Well, you know, because it is about the love triangle. I was thinking about this guy, and I think everything he does is to impress Padme. Like everything.
You think so?
Yeah,
I see. I'm sort of up in the air about that because I see that. I mean, he's clearly attracted to Padme. But there's also this part of him that's driven to do more with his name, to do more with his upbringing. And then we kind of see at the end with what happens to him, he's a bit more complex than just someone who is disrupting Padme's life. So, Corey, what do you think of Clovis as a character?
And I think he's a punk. No, yeah, it's like you said, Dan. It's even like,
go ahead.
I was going to say, like you said, Dan, I couldn't remember where I couldn't place him. You know, I was like, where have we seen this guy? And so I had a hard time kind of getting back in the groove of him. And like you said, Gar, I mean, it's totally a love triangle thing they have going on here. And they're going to explore that and see where that goes. And I'm glad they did, because it brings up some different questions that I have had. But as far as Clovis goes, we kind of get to see his backstory. And it's kind of interesting how he kind of, his upbringing and, you know, his respects for the moons. And I think he's more complex than we see on the screen there. It seems like they kind of cut him off a little bit towards the end. I feel like he was really trying to, yes, number one, impress Padme, and then number two was like, once I've got her, I can just, you know, start making things right again and doing good. And I feel like he did want to do good, and he kind of got cut short at the end there. Was like, I had this big plan, and I'm like, I was going to work it out, and if I could just get past these hurdles, I could do it. And I feel bad for him a little bit towards the end. At the beginning, I was kind of like, yeah, he's a punk, and by the end, I was like, oh, that kind of sucks. So,
well, yeah, that's why you need. I mean, this episode arc takes repeat viewings because based off of what we've seen of him before, it seems like he's the bad guy, and it makes it seem like that. But if you go with what you know by the end of it, that you do feel bad for him, and he really was, you know, that he was trying, even after Dooku put him into power, he was trying to be impartial and be a good person and everything. You go back and like, wait a second, he's the hero, and he's not, I think he is trying to impress the girl. You know, he's not trying to be malevolent or anything. He's everything he's doing. Like, I think before the story, he set himself up in a position to be the person to be with Padme. And then after that, he tried to get Padme on his side and take her to his personal estate place. And, you know, everything he did, I think, was to impress the girl, because let's face it, she's the hottest girl he's ever seen. And he, you know,
she like won that. An Oscar. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I think he is, like you said, he definitely comes across as someone that it's almost like the audience takes on the persona of Anakin, because we begin to feel not jealousy, but we begin to feel this understanding of the tension and why Anakin is so frustrated. Of course, you know, at the very beginning, it says jealousy is the path to chaos at the beginning of the second one. So we see right away what this is going to do. And of course, fear, anger, hate, suffering all plays into the dark side. We see Palpatine's machinations yet again, where he manipulates Anakin to put him in this situation. So it's definitely something we're at the end, and I'm curious. I was going to say this for the end, but I'll just ask it now. Do either of you feel sorry for Clovis and what happens to him?
Yeah, I will say, like I said, I think I feel bad for him. He didn't get his due say, I think, in the all scheme of things. I think if they maybe could have talked about it longer and worked things out, they would kind of come to realize that, like, oh, this guy just, you know, has a good heart and he wants to do good and he wants the girl, but he needs to realize he can't have, you know, obviously they can't expel their secret for what they had of Anakin and Padme. Sure. So I feel like if they would have just like, hey, let's just give him some time and let's work it out, I think things would have worked out better for him.
What, you mean he wouldn't have died?
Well, that was interrupted, but yes, I don't know. I feel like there were a lot of things that were like cut off. And like,
well, think about the idea too that, I mean, let's be honest, if at the beginning he thinks of Anakin as Padme's pilot, because that's the role that he plays when we saw him in season one, but if Anakin is a Jedi, they're not allowed to marry. They're not allowed to date. They're not allowed to court. Nothing. So he sees Padme. She is unattached. She is a friendly, nice, upstanding person that he respects, admires, and is attracted to. So it doesn't make him bad that he, for lack of a better word, puts the moves on her. Mm-hmm. But because we as an audience have 30 plus years of investment in Anakin Skywalker, that's why we see why there's this tension. Because for Clovis, I mean, of course, there's that machismo that he exerts through his will and his ideas, because basically he's got two things that he wants colliding with one another. And of course, it doesn't end very well for him. But then again, he is making a deal with the devil, which is, of course, Palpatine.
Yeah, well, I would say, and you know, this is, you know, like you said, this is something I was maybe going to save, but I'll go ahead and pull out the big guns now. But
there you go.
But I think that he is the hero of the story in that, okay, so you mentioned I'm a teacher. I'm a drama teacher, and also I've taught film history. And you know, I'm not like an expert on this. I don't have a doctorate or anything like that. But I do know a little bit about this sort of thing. And obviously, Lucas is a film is a student of film. And the last one that Clovis was in was specifically taken from Alfred Hitchcock's Notorious in 1966. And you know how. She's supposed to go in and be the spy, but you know, she doesn't want to be because she's got this attachment to Anakin, everything like that. But so I think this as well is very Hitchcockian, reminded me a lot of things in there of like North by Northwest with the, you know, being attacked by bounty hunters and stuff and not knowing why exactly. And, you know, things with Vertigo, like with, you know, trying to investigate someone but not knowing what's going on exactly at first. And then also with Psycho in a way, because I think it's very – you were saying Anakin, but I think it's very easy to come into this and think it's Padme's story because well, she's the first one you see, and Anakin doesn't come in until later. And therefore – you know, with, you know, in the movie Psycho, it's, you know, came out in like 1960 or something. So, spoiler alert, sorry, but, the girl dies, and you think that she's the main character, but then she ends up not being, anyways, yes, it's not only very Hitchcockian, but also, very film noir, like, the movie Double Indemnity, by Billy Wilder, came out in 1944, is often considered to be the most, you know, the best, I don't know about the best film noir, but, you know, like the best representation of film noir. And it's like number 29 on AFI list. Anyways, I love that movie. I've seen it many times.
And well, the lighting too, reflects, no pun intended, that as well.
Well, and throughout the Clone Wars, especially in 2 and 3, you can see, yeah, the lighting, exactly the Venetian blinds in the like the Jedi headquarters in like Anakin's apartment, and also like in scenes where like Yoda's I don't know, apartment or whatever you want to call it in like Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, you see the Venetian lines and the shadowing like that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so it's totally is, you know, getting darker and darker. And here in Double Indemnity, the main character is a guy who sees a spider woman, you know, the femme fatale, which is also often a thing in film noir, which is French for black film. And so he sees a girl and he wants her, even though she's married. And so they have this plan together where they're going to kill the husband and they're going to collect the insurance and they're going to double the insurance, hence the term double indemnity. And so I think that's the story here. He wants Padme, even though she's married, and he doesn't know that at first, and finds that out, but he still wants her, and she's not the evil spider woman that turns on him at the end, but she is the pawn of the Sith. The Sith are the evil, the spider woman or the femme fatale or whatever, but they are using Padme as their pawn, just like they're using him. And, it becomes very clear to that at the end when she is forced to shoot the guy by Dooku. Everything that she's doing, she thinks she's helping the Republic. And, of course, helping the Republic is ultimately helping the Empire anyways. Mm-hmm. But, so she's obviously helping the Sith, and they're using all the – they're the ultimate puppet masters, of course. But she is basically that Spider Woman, and he wants her, and everything is going bad, and there's a trap set for him, like in every film noir. And in fact, Sidious says that to Dooku or Tyrannus at one point. We have to set a trap for him. So everything is leading to this at the end, where like the crap is going to hit the fan for him, and there's no way out. And he even dies at the end, and it's like so tragic for him. And the only thing that could have made it better, as far as having him be the hero and or the anti-hero and this film noir style, is if he was narrating the whole time, which we wouldn't fit Star Wars, but
that would be interesting though. Well, it's almost like what we're gonna see with the first person Luke Skywalker novel coming out early next year too. Well, very good, you did bring out the big guns. A lot of food for thought there. Especially when you consider, again, the theme, the tone set up, and definitely Dave Filoni likes to emulate films and styles that he has admired before. Mm-hmm. We see it replete throughout the Clone Wars series. I want to jump real quickly to Obi-Wan and Anakin's conversation, perhaps the most pointed conversation we have seen between the two of them, maybe in all of Star Wars. I'm including the Clone Wars, and I'm including the six films. I find it fascinating what they talk about. And Corey and I, we all take our little notes on things. And one of the things that Corey wrote down was when Obi-Wan says the Jedi are allowed to have feelings. I wrote it down too. He says it's not that we are not allowed to have these feelings. Mm. It's natural. And then Anakin cuts him off. And I wish that he didn't, because I would have liked to see where Obi-Wan transitions to that. But Corey, what kind of impact did that have on you, seeing those two talk like that?
Well, it's interesting because, like you said, that's such a key scene for those two characters, because they're brothers, and we know what's going to happen. And so I feel like they've really touched on a whole other level for me, as as friends, as brothers, as warriors. And I think for them to kind of talk about something that they both have dealt with, Obi-Wan brings up his feelings. I can't think of the gal's name.
Satine.
Yes. So he even says, like, hey, listen, I've been there, done that, and I know what you're going through. And it's almost like, oh my gosh, here we go. This is like, this is a little microscope into Obi-Wan as well. And we get to see,
a harbinger, if you will.
Yes. And it's, it's fascinating, because it's like you said, I wish the scene would run longer. They would have had some more dialogue there, but they cut it off a little bit, and even like you said, Gar, you had a great point where that whole scene is really dark. It looks like his apartment. Even look at the poster on the background there. It's the Padres poster.
Yeah.
And he's sitting on these crates, like almost like he hasn't moved in yet.
Doesn't it remind you of A New Hope when Luke is playing with the C-16 Skyhopper and Anakin's playing with the – that's beautiful.
It's awesome. It's an awesome scene. And like you said, it brings up so many things about, as far as relationships go, as the Jedi can have relationships and what they – can and can't do. And it's almost like, you can have feelings, but, and that's normal, but you just can't do, Owen cut me off. And it was just a crucial scene, I think, for building blocks of their relationship.
Well, especially when you see you can see there's tension there. Mm-hmm. And Anakin, he gets annoyed more with the situation than he does with Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan looks troubled. And Anakin looks at Obi-Wan. I find a lot, especially, again, we've been referencing a lot the second episode, because it just seems like that's where a lot of the meat, I think, of this entire arc comes from. But you can tell that Anakin, I think the main person that Anakin is angry with in this and frustrated with is himself. Mm. And I think that's reflected in the way that he, the glances he gets. And as you said before, Corey, the animation has just reached a point. It's just so beautiful in its execution. And you can feel the souls of these characters. And Anakin's heart is just in turmoil. He's very frustrated and he's full of angst. And it's just, it's a really important scene. Gar, what did you make about that entire interaction between the two of them?
Well, I have a lot of thoughts about that scene. One, you mentioned the poster that has been Quanneros on there, which is awesome.
And Sebulba too, which I find interesting. Oh, I have a poster of the guy who tried to kill me.
And of course, the Ben Quanneros is there because of Kyle Newman being friends with Dave Filoni. But Kyle Newman also was going to be a voice in the Clone Wars. He recorded stuff, and that's never going to happen. So,
yeah,
that's too. I mean, the thing is, let me just go off on tangent a little bit here. I love the Clone Wars in a way that it had a perfect beginning and end, in that there was two beginnings and two endings. There was the movie was the beginning with Ahsoka, and then the end of the series on TV with Ahsoka at season 5 was the first, the first ending there. And then the first beginning was on TV with Yoda. And then also the second beginning was with Yoda, and the second ending was with Yoda at the end here on Netflix. And so in a way it was like perfect, because it felt like, there was a few months before Attack of the Clones and maybe a few months before Revenge of the Sith that this began and ended. But it's just heartbreaking when you know there's other stuff out there that they worked on and we're not going to be able to see. So I want to say that. But then also, you mentioned, Corey, as well, that, the darkness of the room. I mentioned those other movies, but also it reminds me a bit of George Lucas's Friends movie. Francis Ford Coppola made, Godfather Part II, and, The Godfather, he keeps getting dark, getting darker and darker and in darkness. Yeah. And that's, obviously Anakin. And so that's awesome too. And then also that conversation I love, just as you said, how he said, it's okay to have, feelings. That's only natural. But I think he didn't continue like you were saying, but I think if he would have continued, in other words, what he was saying is it's okay to have the feelings, it's natural, but it's not okay to continue to dwell on those feelings and obsess over those feelings and act on those feelings and not obsess over those things.
Well, and that's also something that differentiates an adult from a child. Whatever kind of thoughts or inclinations or you have, an adult knows how to discipline themselves. And Anakin is very much struggling with that. I want to jump right to before the fight. Of course, we're going to talk about the fight because it's an incredible moment. But before that happens, Anakin and Padme have a very disturbing and very interesting interaction between the two of them. Anakin describes Clovis. He says, "A serpent can shed its skin, but it is still a serpent." Mm-hmm. And I find that interesting because he's being manipulated by the great serpent, which is, of course, Palpatine. So when Padme and Anakin interact, he grabs Padme's shoulder and kind of shoves her a little bit. That's a form of abuse, mm-hmm. I would say. And we see the physical abuse, the intimidation. He's taller than her, and he kind of hovers over her. She doesn't seem afraid of him. She seems really annoyed and mad with him. There's definitely some interesting things there, especially when he says, "As your husband, I demand." And she says, "You demand?" And then she kind of brushes it aside to talk about why she's doing what she's doing. She's using logic. He's using pure emotion. Corey, tell me about the relationship dynamics here.
It's huge, but I want to point out one key thing I think that Anakin brings to this, and I want to relate it to Matt Lantern's portrayal and his voice. Mm-hmm. And this whole arc is incredible for a voice actor.
Yes,
it really brought such emotion and determination to this, and I really enjoyed that. I'm trying to put that out there, especially these key scenes too. I think he really nailed them, really dead on. But as far as Anakin and Padme's relationship in this arc here, it's almost like they're coming to grips with themselves and the lies they're telling, and it's getting worse and worse as things progress, and the war's hardening Anakin, and you can just see him, he's making rash judgments, as we see.
The physical shoving her, mm-hmm. even if it's not even shoving against the wall, but he definitely shoves her. That's pretty serious. It makes it harder. And again, this is a kid's show, presumably. But Netflix season 6, I think, takes it to a whole other level, which we've seen with the level of violence in the Order 66 arc. But it makes it temporarily at least harder to glom onto Anakin and root for him when he does that kind of stuff. Of course, we know why he's doing it and what it's leading to. But, Gar, that's pretty disturbing stuff.
Yeah, it is. It's not cool. We should not be learning to do as Anakin does, of course. And I think Anakin, it's interesting. The first, the fortune cookie on the first episode says, to love is to trust and to trust is to believe. And I think that's a big part that Anakin never learned to trust others. I mean, if he had just one time trusted Mace Windu in Revenge of the Sith, then he never, he never would have went to go and cut off his hand. And, he just would have stayed in his room like he had been told to by Mace Windu. Then that would have changed, everything. I remember reading a study that said those that are constantly thinking about their significant other cheating are the ones that cheat themselves, because they see how easy it is to do, and so they think that the other person is doing it. And I don't know,
but Anakin isn't a cheat, he's just paranoid.
Well, he did flirt maybe a little bit with that Zygerian chick.
In the slave arc?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Probably not so much. I mean, but just the fact that he is keeping the whole relationship, a secret, and he's cheating on the Jedi Order.
Ooh, I like that. That's good.
Yeah.
I also think, too, it's in that scene, we get to see the Chancellor interact as well. And he just, as he leaves that scene, that action takes place. And we see that we see Anakin put the Chancellor up against Padme and his relationship with both of them. And he's obviously picking Padme over the Chancellor. He's like, look, listen, why would you take on this mission, after you need to refuse to do this? And it's like, I was like, well, why wouldn't she do this? And it's almost like you said, Danny, he shoves her, but also realizes like, listen, I'm looking out for the best part of you, and so that you can stay safe.
True, and it's Padme always motivates everything that he does, but I can't help but think, ironically, and Jeff McGee will love this, but I can't help but think of one of the first G.I. Joe cartoons when Destro says premature panic is a sign of an immature mind. I don't know why that popped in my head, but you see very much how immature Anakin is. He's like a man child. I mean, his growth is emotionally stunted because he's put in this ridiculous box that the Jedi make you adapt to as far as how you have to manage your emotions. It's hard enough as a mature man to manage them for some people, but he started his training when he was older. He's already got this dealings with attachments, and he's got issues when it comes to dealing with loss, and he doesn't want to lose his wife. So typically what happens when you see someone who's jealous is it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So I don't know that he drives her away, even though at the end, of course, we do see something pretty rough that does happen. But there's just a lot that causes problems with he and Padme, and that leads to the fight. Mm. which is the most powerful moment in this arc, one of the more powerful moments in anything. And even watching it a second and the third time, you notice a little bit more about the intensity. For some reason, the first time I saw it, I thought that Clovis got a few more punches in, but clearly after watching it the second time, he doesn't really have much of a chance. But Anakin shows his true colors here, and I know, Corey, you said it gave you chills. You even hear the humming of the Imperial March when Anakin is getting really intense. But guys, let's talk about the fight.
Yeah, like I said, give me chills, Vader chills, if you will. It was definitely, I knew he'd walk in that moment. I just knew they would have that scene. And when he walked in, I thought, oh, he's just going to slug him once. And it kind of
really?
Over with. Yeah, I really thought that. It's kind of like the one punch. Yeah, hey, this is my
but
girl
he, but
type
he strangles
punch.
Him and lifts him in
right.
the
yeah,
air.
Well, that's what that took off. And all of a sudden, he's strangling him. Then all of a sudden, my mind flashes back to A New Hope, and he's strangling the officer. And just like his instant anger, his instant rush of just straight to, you know, I'm going to kill you, or not just to kill you, but just going to hurt you. Because, you know, like you said, he's losing something. So he's on this grips of... He needs to take action and do something striking to be able to make his point. But yeah, he's tossing around with the Force. And then all of a sudden, Clovis is like, you know, hey, let's fight like men. And then Anakin's like, sure. And then he just kind of beats him down. And like,
for a minute, and then he uses the Force again.
Yeah, and then he uses, that's what I think was interesting too. Look at that. He like, all right, I'll fight like a man. And all of a sudden he realizes, no, I need to take this guy out, and starts using the Force again. Like almost like, I'm going to play dirty. So yeah, it was a huge scene, and you can see, and even Padme staying there is kind of like, what are you doing? Are you insane? So yeah, it was really well done.
Well, before we get Gar's thoughts, I just want to point out that when they start this fight, Padme looks at Anakin and she says, Anakin, no. But not like lovers. It very much, and I was very careful to look at it the second time through, she very much talks to him like she's his mother, like she's scolding him, which I think is an illuminating examination of what their relationship is like. Not that she is his mother, but she is older than him. She met him when he was just a little boy, and she kind of took him under her wing. And then, of course, he grows up and matures, and they fall in love. And that's fine. But it just shows you how emotionally stunted this relationship is.
Well, I also think, too, like, just to jump in, up to this point, they've already fought a couple times, disagreed. So their emotions are high.
Sure.
And she knows what he can do. So it's almost like, don't do what I think you're going to do because I know you so well.
So you didn't, do you, you didn't
No, I don't,
that?
I don't, no, I don't think she's berating him as far as like a motherly figure would. I think it was more of like, do what I think you're going to do. No, I don't, yeah. I don't agree.
She did replace his mother, you know, because that was the first, you know, part to him turning towards the dark side was when he lost his mom, and then it was like she filled that gap, and then it was
an
the next
Oedipal big, complex.
Yeah. You know, my first thoughts when I saw this was I thought of X-Men in a couple different ways because, one, it made me think of X-Men First Class when you see Magneto do all these terrible things and beat up all these bad guys. It's kind of fun. It's like, okay, this guy is becoming this bad guy. And here it's like, it's a terrible thing, but it's also kind of a fun thing. Okay, here he's becoming Darth Vader. It's such a juicy thing. And then also when he punches one fist to the other fist, and it's his metal arm to Clovis's normal arm, that's straight from, you know, the first X-Men movie Wolverine is fighting at the beginning there.
I've never seen that in Star Wars where he hits somebody with his robotic arm and you actually can tell and feel the impact of that.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's advantages. It's not just all bad. But, you know, one thing, going back to what I was telling you guys about before, about how this is kind of like film noir, one thing that's interesting is that first, I want to talk about how the prequels in general are like that, in that some people don't like the prequels in that they're like, oh, well, I already know what's going to happen, so there were no surprises. Well, to begin with, I don't like that argument against the prequels because you know, one, you already know what's going to happen in your favorite movie that you watch over and over again anyway, so it really doesn't matter at a certain point. You know, if you watch a movie that has to do with historical things or, you know, based off a book or something, you already know what's going to happen. And, but, you know, and sometimes knowing what's going to happen actually increases your enjoyment because...
That's Shakespeare.
Yes, in Shakespeare and also in a lot of Hitchcock's movies, like I was saying, and also in Double Indemnity. At the very beginning, he says, "I did it." He's confessing to his boss, Keys. He's like, "You know, I did it. I killed the guy, and I'm going to tell you why. You know, I'm going to tell you the whole thing, the whole story." And so the drama becomes like, "How did it happen?" And you know, are they going to get away with it in this moment? And then it all comes crashing down in this moment or whatever. And you know, kind of like in the last arc with the clones, it's like, you know, that he's not going to fix everything and everyone's going to figure out Order 66, but still there's all this drama in there. And here you see Anakin going to the dark side, and you see that drama in there. And then also the story of Clovis, going back to that, of him being the hero of this. Anakin is in a way the boss that the main character in Double Indemnity is talking to, his boss Keys, and like he's the guy that's figuring it out, that is figuring out the fact that this guy is you know, we shouldn't trust him, even though he is ultimately an okay guy, and he's not doing it all because of terrible intentions and everything. And even though, you know, Anakin is beating the heck out of him, I don't know, like after watching it more, it's like I feel bad for Clovis, and it's more of that tragedy going down on Clovis, and he's having to deal with all this. And then at the end, he covers for Anakin and says, "Oh, no, it's okay." And I think once again, it's because he wants the girl. He's like, he knows that if he does that, Padme would appreciate it, even though it would help out the competition in a way. Padme sees that he's, you know, the sensitive guy that's trying to be nice and helpful. And
well, he takes the high road for sure. And you almost have to wonder, is it purely just, and I certainly think that his admiration for Padme is a big part of it, but he completely bails Anakin out. I mean, this could have literally led to Anakin being expelled from the Jedi Order, which, of course, Clovis, you know, savagely hints to right before they get into their fight, their fisticuffs, as it were. But I'm wondering what his true motivations are for sticking up for Anakin. Is it purely just for love of Padme, or is there more to him than that?
Like I said before, I think there's more to it. I think, yeah, if he could get Padme, it'd be good for, I mean, he obviously is flirtatious with her in some scenes, but notice every scene that he is flirtatious with her, she does kind of like defend herself and say, kind of turn away and say, "No, this is wrong," or, you know, "Let's eat something." So it's always constantly, she's proactive about that. So she should be able to pick up on those signals and go, okay, she's not interested or whatever the reason may be. But yet I also think his plan, like he says on the third episode, he talks about his plan for getting everything balanced, everything back to normal, the way it used to be. And that's what his ultimate goal was. And if he can achieve that through the Sith, and be able to work with Count Dooku and achieve that, then he's going to do that. And that's what we see happen.
He knows that Dooku is Sith, or just a means to an end?
That's a good question. I think he doesn't really care who he is. He wants to get to his goal. Whether, you know, he thinks he's doing something good, which he is. His plan is to do something good, and whether he's Sith or not, I mean, he doesn't even know who the Sith is. I mean, I don't think he would know what the Sith are.
Well, I mean, everyone I think knows, has heard of the history and the legend of them, but no one knows that they're out and about, you know, right now.
Well, I was going to say, I don't know that everyone knows about what the Sith is and that they're all that bad. Maybe they know a little bit, but I mean, by the time you get to episode 4, people don't even know what Jedi are practically. And so I don't know. I mean, he definitely knows that he's a separatist leader, and he knows that it's dishonest to go up the ranks, so to speak, to by means of the separatists helping him out this way, because he should be completely impartial. But once he gets there, he wants to become impartial, even though that's impossible and he should have known that. But the thing is, even though, Corey, you're saying, well, there's also this other motivation to be a good person, to be the leader of this bank and everything like that. Well, maybe, but even that, I think, is also to impress the girl. Look, I got this great job, and I'm doing great things with my life. I got, you know, I'm leader of the banks now, and look at me. You know, I still think it's to impress the girl.
And he's got pretty nice hair too, doesn't he?
Charismatic smile, yeah.
He's got those face tattoos. What's up with that? Like, he has face. I don't think there's any humans in Star Wars, in the visual medium of Star Wars, that have face tattoos like him. And
right. I wonder if that's his upbringing and through his adoption and stuff like that. That was just part of the culture.
Yeah, maybe.
That's interesting, because I saw him as a human-ish, but I wasn't totally sold on him being human. So that's interesting.
He seems to be, you know, bad. You know, talk about things from a certain point of view. Typically, people who are bad don't necessarily think that they're bad. They think that they have a different drive or different motivation. We see sprinkles of that in episode 2 when Anakin says, well, maybe someone could just, you know, make them realize this is really what's the best way to be. So Clovis, again, he's clearly not a bad guy as far as, you know, the Darth Vader dressed in black stereotype of a bad guy. I think it's safe to say that, again, for some reason we've been making a lot of Dungeons and Dragons references lately. He's almost like a neutral. He's out for himself, but he's also out for his ideals, which are not to hurt people or to take lives, but to try to fight for something that he very much believes in. And really, that's what the Separatists and the Republic are doing as well. Mm-hmm. Gar, I'm so glad again that you were, in fact, the person that won our little contest, because this has gone so beautifully. I want to talk real quickly about this marriage that Anakin and Padme have. How did you feel about her saying, you know, our relationship is built on lies and deception, which is true, mm-hmm. and I don't want to see you anymore. We're all married, okay?
Yeah.
You have ups and downs because you're human, but you love your spouse. I can't imagine saying to a grown adult, I don't want to see you anymore, but still being married for years or for more time. It almost becomes like a teen drama, and I don't say that to be funny or facetious, but do you feel like that's a realistic avenue? Maybe that's Padme asserting herself because she is a stronger character.
Yeah.
Although one could debate that kind of goes away through the course of episode 3. But Corey, teen drama, marriage, what's going on here?
See, I didn't see it as teen drama. Like I said before, the animation is well done, and I noticed that the animation, their faces look older, especially Anakin in this, and I don't know if it's the stress or what's going on, but
probably.
But I feel like they're older in this arc. And they've come to some relationship stepping stones and going through some hard times and hard issues. But as far as comparing it to a marriage or a teen drama, I would play it's more marriage. I mean, it's because he says a lot of things like, you know, he's really fighting to keep her out of harm's way and doing all that he can. And even taking drastic action, like we see the fight, we see him pushing the shoulder, things like that. Something he should be doing, obviously. So. No. But you said yes, they have a fight, and she says, I don't want to see you anymore. Now, does that mean I don't want to see you anymore forever, or the end of the week, or the end of the day?
Well, she just says for now.
For now, right. So, I mean, I can't speak for all women, but I know that when my wife and I have disagreements, we, you know, go off and think about things and then reconvene and talk and you know, work things out to the better interest, the better good. But I know that there's in any relationship when anybody has a disagreement, there's obviously, you know, emotions run high. And I think in this instance that was definitely there, and she was, you know, she's kind of had it up to here as far as, you know, him asserting himself. And she was kind of like, listen, I just need a break from you, man. Not necessarily is over, but I think he needed a break. So
I think the most interesting thing. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it so that lends to – it being more of like, you know, listen, we're in this relationship for good. I'm not calling it quits. We're married, but, you know, I need a break.
Well, yeah, she says, I don't want to, we shouldn't see each other anymore, which a marriage, you're not seeing each other. Maybe that's too much high school student lingo, but that you're married.
Yeah, I think
it's a whole other level that you really have to look at from through a much more intense lens, because it's the ultimate, it's pretty serious, you know, it's much higher than that. I do want to point out really quickly, she says to Anakin, you could have killed him. And he says, I know. And then I'm sure you both noticed this. When he says, I know, he stares at his robotic hand. Mm-hmm. You know, he's more machine now than man, twisted and evil. It's like it's a beautiful foreshadowing to, I'm becoming someone that I am afraid of. I'm afraid of what is happening. And we see a lot of this through episode 3, of course. But this really could have been, like, chronologically, I'm pretty sure it doesn't take place right before Revenge of the Sith. But there's so many parallels here between that and the man versus self conflict that Anakin faces in episode 3.
I also want to point out too, like you said about their relationship at the end there, when Anakin catches Padme and Clovis and he's holding on to both of them, and he says, climb up, climb up. And Padme tries to climb and he says, I'm losing you. That really caught me. And I was like,
yeah,
oh my gosh, what impactful. He's realizing in himself, like, I'm losing you. This is life and death. And he almost realizes, like, he's done so much wrong to this up to this point, you know, and realizing maybe a new realization in the relationship.
Well, you know, they don't have a real marriage. She says it herself, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, once again, knowing the end and where, you know, she dies at the end of Revenge of the Sith and how tragic it does end up, it heightens the drama here, because it's like, oh, come on, please just actually do break up with him. And you know that it can't. But of course, at the same time, if you didn't know the end, then you wouldn't know that it would be a good thing for her to break up or not. And so we do know that it would be a good thing for her to break up. And so it strengthens her character in that she actually is thinking about this. And ultimately she doesn't, and she ends tragically as well, which, you know, the prequel trilogy is meant to be a tragedy, and so it's a perfect ending for her story-wise. But, you know, knowing that there was this time here where she really did take a firmer stance and say, you know, that's too much, then, you know, that makes her stronger. I think that's great. I think Padme is a great character. That another criticism of the prequels sometimes is, people don't know who the main character is of episode 2 and 3 is. Three is clearly Anakin, but 1 and 2. And who the main character is, like who gets the most screen time, and who the protagonist of the hero is, two different things. Lucas clearly says in one of the the audio commentaries for the DVD or the Blu-ray that Padme is the protagonist of episode 1, in that she's the one that is the leader of the planet, and she's the one that wants the planet to be freed, and they're being oppressed, and they win freedom at the end of episode 1. And so she's the main protagonist. She maybe doesn't get the most screen time or whatever, but she's the hero. And then I think 2 is also her, but she loses, and it's the beginning of that tragedy, in that she's the one that doesn't want the clone army to happen. And then it does happen at the end, and they realize, okay, we are sort of beginning to be caught into something. They actually did get caught into the trap of the Sith back in episode 1, but they didn't realize it back then.
Right. And see, I'm not going to go against George Lucas, of course, but I would say episode 1's protagonist is Qui-Gon Jinn myself.
That's because you like him so much.
But I do. But the protagonist drives the action. You really don't get from point A to point B without him. But I think you could make a point for Anakin and Padme as a double protagonist in episode 2, personally.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, if you were to say who follows the action, it would be the droids in episode 4.
You know? Oh, yeah, good point.
But they're not, you know, and nobody complains about episode 4, the original Star Wars. It's the greatest, you know, it's awesome.
Right.
But at the same time, it follows the droids for a long time, and they're clearly not the main character.
Very good. Well, we've covered a lot in a brief amount of time. There's so much, again, with it's going to be the challenge to a cup of Clone Wars, it, for me at least, is that there's so many things to talk about when we're just taking arcs into consideration, not individual episodes. But there's a lot more to this, especially with the psychology of these characters that we know and love, that I think just stands to reason that you want to do repeated viewings, because you will look at things differently. So
yeah.
Before we sign off, looks like Gar, your coffee's getting a little low. And any last thoughts, guys, on anything in any of these three episodes that we didn't discuss that you think we need to bring up for everyone?
I think I want to relate it to questions that like we've been wanting to be answered. I feel like we've kind of been in the first arc, the Order 66, were some questions that like were led to, you know, the background of the clones and the, kind of how they interact, and we get to see this. They're opening this box a little bit more for us as viewers and us as fans to be able to see more into their scope of their lives. And then again, we get to see Anakin and Padme play out in this arc, and it's just really nice to see all this. And it's, I'm enjoying each arc as we go along with this, and just be able to open up each character and dissect them a little bit more, a little bit further. So I'm really enjoying them.
Cool. Gar, what about you? Any final thoughts on the Clovis arc?
Oh, I have about 10,000 more thoughts. You guys got some?
All right.
Yeah, I have a lot more notes, but I'll just, you know, quickly finish with the theme that I have been talking about, how Clovis is, you know, he's a good guy. He's a tragic hero here, and he could have been an alternative and better husband for Padme if she had, in fact, chosen to leave Anakin and go with him. And even at the very end, when Anakin is holding both of them and he chooses to leave, I think it's for Padme in that, okay, he realizes, okay, he can't pick us both up. So if I can't have Padme, then what good is my life? And then also, if by chance I do survive, you know what? That's a pretty heroic thing, and she would see that as a good thing. I don't know. I think to the end, it was all about trying to get the girl, and he is, you know, it's very easy to come into this once again to be like, okay, he's the scumbag because of what we know from him before, but he really is the better person that isn't going down that darker path. He was set in this trap, and it was all a trap for him, and it's kind of sad, but in the end, he had, in a way, pure motivations and wanted to be a better person and a better fit for Padme probably as well.
Yes, it's the thing that I like about this arc, as I mentioned, is just psychologically you really get to examine these characters through a much more critical lens than we've seen in a lot of other things, and it reveals a lot of the emotions. The only thing that I want to bring up that we didn't particularly talk about is the fact that Anakin is clearly abusive. He's clearly dangerous. She knows already that he wiped out an entire group of Tuskens, and she's still with him. I mean, love is blind. Sometimes it's deaf too. And it's much more complicated than just, oh, you're not nice to me, I'm going to get out of this. Padme is a person who honors her commitments. She's committed to her husband, but he's dangerous. And she can see that he's conflicted. She probably believes that she can help him. And in many ways, she does help him to find some inner peace. But of course, ultimately and tragically, as Gar just pointed out so beautifully, it leads to a lot of bad places. Episode 3 is a tragedy. That a lot of the prequels take on a tragic undertone because of what happens. So I think we learn as much about Padme and have even more questions about Padme because of all these things that happen, because clearly it's a toxic relationship and it has a bad end. All right. Well, Gar, it's been a real pleasure having you on.
It'll be my pleasure. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you. And before we let you go, of course, we have our five questions that we ask all of our Star Wars celebrities here on Coffee with Kenobi. So, Corey, I'll go ahead and let you ask the first one.
Sure. Gar, your favorite Star Wars movie?
All of them. I like all the Star Wars movies, and I agree with Kyle Newman when he's like, yeah, how can you be a fan when you don't like even half of what you're a fan of? Like, that'd be like if I loved a certain sport and I only liked them when they were at the home games, but then when they're away games, I rooted against them or something like that. And people root against the prequels and they haven't even seen the Clone Wars and they haven't seen the prequels since they saw them in theaters and they don't give them a proper chance. That bugs me. But if I push comes to shove, if I'm going to, you know, just say one movie, I'll have to say Revenge of the Sith, because it's the most, exciting and action-packed and emotional, and the stakes are the highest, and yeah, I just love it.
Who is your favorite character?
Once again, all of them. The ice cream maker guy, you know who that is?
That reminds me of a David Lee Roth song.
The ice cream maker guy is, of course, the guy that's carrying in an orange jumpsuit and he's carrying an ice cream maker and he's running through the halls of.
Oh yeah.
No, I mean, I think that's hilarious. Like that people will pick out random people like that, but I guess Yoda, I just love, you know, his wisdom and how he's like, you know, Mr. Miyagi and everybody else that's, you know, so wise. And we all wish we had a mentor like that.
Okay. Favorite line of dialogue or film moment? Don't say all of them.
Oh, dang it. well, I got to go at the end of Revenge of the Sith, you know, my favorite movie. And, you know, at the end, the climactic battle and everything's so awesome and just ends so perfectly. You know, you are the chosen one. It was said that you would destroy the Sith, not join them. And you're to bring balance to the Force, not leave it in darkness. You're my brother, Anakin. You know, I love that. I can't do a good impression or anything, but that's just so emotional. And like, I almost want to cry. Of course I don't, because I'm a man. I mean, I just remember in theaters, people coming out in tears. And I just like, it was just so amazing.
So if you collect, what is your favorite collectible that you own?
I do collect, and I'm not going to say all of them, but I can't just say one. I have a room full of Star Wars. I don't have, you know, as much as maybe even you, or certainly not Steve Sansweet or something. You know, sometimes I listen to these podcasts about collecting. I'm like, man, I don't collect very much compared to these people. But then I also have a bigger collection than anyone like I know, though, probably. Mm-hmm. I have a foosball table that's Star Wars, which is cool.
Wife
hates because it takes up too much room.
And you need to put a picture of that on our Facebook page.
Yeah, I'll try.
That'd be awesome.
I have Darth Maul cufflinks, which are awesome.
Nice. Sweet.
A book that's like from the 70s. It was like C-3PO teaching you how to use computers, and I just
awesome.
Ironic.
Yeah, and I have the laser disc and the record, and of course I love the lightsabers. I don't have like a ton of awesome ones, but I do have one master replica Anakin / Luke blue lightsaber, which is awesome.
The FX one?
Or the
LE one?
Yeah, they're you know, the light up and everything. I guess they're made by Hasbro now, but they were made by Master
Yeah. I have that same one. It's great.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Okay. What particular messages or themes about Star Wars resonate or speak to you?
Once again, all of them, but, I will say, eternal life is an important thing to me that I thought, the circle on that story was completed in Revenge of the Sith, with the fact that we knew with Obi-Wan that he disappeared, and so did Yoda. But then when we went back to the prequels and Qui-Gon didn't disappear, it was like, what the heck is going on there? And the Jedi didn't disappear in the arena in episode two. And then in Revenge of the Sith, you see Anakin wants eternal life, and he's trying to figure that out. And he is trying every which way because he's having these nightmares and everything, and he wants to save Padme and doesn't want her to die like his mother. And then he chooses the wrong path. And you learn at the end that Yoda is like, you know, he figured out the secret to eternal life, and we figured out a little bit more about how he did that in the Clone Wars here, and about how he, you know, communed with Qui-Gon and through everything. And just so that just hit me strong when I saw Revenge of the Sith the first few times, like, wow, that what a great message that, you know, people try to find eternal life and happiness through other means, but it all comes back to, you know, the good side of the Force, or for us through, you know, being a good person or whatever you believe, is, you know, the back to the basics and not trying to find this other outside sources, but back to being good is how you truly become happy and have eternal life. And then we see him at the end of Return of the Jedi. And so that's one of my favorite things.
Yeah, the spiritual aspects of Star Wars I've always gravitated towards. I know Corey have as well. So I couldn't agree more. We're so awesome to have on. I'm so glad that we're able to make this all work out and line up. And how can people get in touch with you and share their Star Wars thoughts with you and get to know a little bit more about you?
Well, that's all. I mean, I've never been asked that before because I'm not a famous person or anything.
Well, now you are.
Yeah, now I am because I'm on this great podcast.
Well, it's because the thing that is so cool about having you join us is that you are an awesome guy with a lot to say about Star Wars and life in general, and you deserve to have your voice heard, as do all of these awesome Star Wars fans that we know. So it's just only natural that people get a chance to interact with you because you've got a lot to say.
I appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm on, you know, Facebook. My name is Gar Van Orden. And if you hear me from this podcast and do want to talk to me about these things, then let me know if you're friending me or whatever that you heard me on here, I guess. And then I do have a Twitter that I don't use much, though. I guess if you contacted me through that, I will get back to you. And my Twitter name is at Gar Wars, GARRWARS. And I'm on, you know, Google Plus as my name. I don't know what it, I mean. Yeah, some things I don't use as much, but I'll certainly get back to you if you do contact me through those means.
Awesome. And we'll put your Twitter account on our show notes as well. Well, Gar, thank you again for being on A Cup of Clone Wars and discussing the Clovis arc with us. We certainly look forward to having you on sometime in the future for Rebels reactions, and keep on fighting the good fight, man, because we love hearing what you have to say and appreciate you spending time here with us on Coffee with Kenobi.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks. I appreciate it. Like I've said before, you know, a lot of people listen to this podcast, think it's great, and it's just a great outlet for everybody to get their voice out, because me, like you, I've thought about starting up a podcast, and there's a lot of reasons I haven't, and I'd rather just be a part of yours, you know, than, because there's so many podcasts out there that, like, I feel like it'd be a waste of time now. I'd be a wash or whatever, so I'd just rather be a part of you guys.
Well, I'll encourage you to, you know, peruse that avenue, because you never know, because even just having this conversation tonight has just shown that you have a whole host of your own ideas, some things we've never heard before, things that fans and listeners have never heard before. And you have your own voice that somebody could pick up and enjoy. And I would just encourage you to, you know, do what you want to do and be able to peruse that avenue. As far as that's something you want to do, I say go for it, man. I mean, there's going to be something out there that somebody's going to listen to you. That's, That's the reason Dan and I did it. So I don't see why you couldn't do it either. So absolutely.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, well said, Corey. Well, you should co-host this show, Corey. That's good.
Hey.
That's good. And Gar, we certainly are a better show for having you on. So thank you again so much and have a wonderful evening.
I appreciate it. Thanks. Talk to you later.
Chewie, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date on our Twitter feed at twitter.com/coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, download the album Eye to Eye by Steve Torok on iTunes.
Give the evacuation code signal.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars-related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along. Move along.